We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Clay Holmes for the Pirates delivers. Swing and a fly ball to right. Way back to the wall and an opposite field grand slam for Paul Goldschmidt against Clay Holmes. His 19th. And the Cardinals open it up and lead it 6-2.
Greg Brown had the call right here on 93.7 The Fan. You either heard it, you saw it. But if you listened to yesterday's show, you certainly know where I come down on it. That was the last one. That was the knockout punch for the Pirates season in 2019. As they now find themselves, by virtue of yesterday's loss, and it was another crusher for them, chock full of the kind of frustrating sort of little minutiae and details, right? The frustrating elements that make up any baseball game that we've become accustomed to seeing, right? But it was the end of it nonetheless. And I'll tell you what, last night, it's disappointing enough to hear that clip and to sort of hear the dejection. I mean, Brownie's a pro, too. So he calls it a certain way where you can just hear the gravity of it in how even his tone is there. Maybe a little bit foreboding, almost, I might even say. So you can hear it. Then you can hear that buzz in the crowd, too. But it was the knockout punch that Paul Goldschmidt delivered. Because now you look at where they are in the standings, the Pirates, where they find themselves, where they open up the day. They were 7.5 back of the second wild card yesterday. That wasn't good. And probably more tellingly, the Pirates were almost as far back in their own division before the game started yesterday. And they didn't lose ground in the division because the Cubs surprisingly lost and have lost two in a row. But they're 5.5 back of third. They're 6 back of second. And then there's that extra game and a half. So three teams in your own division to leapfrog. And then if you look at the wild card, it's actually easier to count the number of teams that the Pirates wouldn't have to jump to qualify for the second wild card. There's only three of them. The Reds a half game back, the Mets a game back, and the Marlins don't matter. They're not a real baseball team. The Pirates are a real baseball team that gives a crap. I believe that the Pirates want to win. To a man. I believe Neil Huntington wants to field a winner. I believe those players who busted their asses last night trying to win that game, trying to rally when they were down 6-2 with one last rap and got it all the way to 6-5 and got it all the way to this, by the way. More on this in a minute.
Long pause at the belt. Here's the pitch. Swing and a line drive. Base hit into right field. Cora going to wave home the runner. Here comes the throw to the plate. He is out at the plate. Kevin Newman is thrown out by Jose Martinez. The potential tying run is thrown out on a base hit to right field. And the Pirates still trail it 6-5.
They gave a crap. I am not here today to take the open wound that was last night's game, grab my big old salt shaker that I carry with me on the air, just tons of salt, and dump salt into that fresh wound. Not going to do that. Not going to rip the players. In fact, I'm not even going to spend an inordinate amount of time wondering aloud why Felipe Vasquez wasn't available after 35 pitches over 2 days. I'm not going to spend time wondering about a sacrifice bunt again. I'm going to spend a little bit of time about that play we just heard. But I am not going to sit here. I did not want to come on the air today and speak about the little things, the minutiae. And by the way, what's on tap today is this, what we're talking about, and it's brought to you by Fatheads 15 Packs, now available in Sunshine, Daydream, and Bumbleberry. It's not about the minutiae yesterday. When I watched that game and when I watched the way it ended, really when I took it in sum, though, every little thing, all those little things I just mentioned, plus the Pirates against Ponce de Leon, who did not find the fountain of efficiency at any point in this game. It's the only one of those jokes I'll make, I swear. They load the bases against him in the first inning. They're threatening, can't get it done. They tie the game, but they can never take the lead. You get the idea. It's not about any of those things that happen. It's about the big picture. This is what hit me watching this game last night. Do you know what it was? Even though it had a lot of moving parts, and even though a lot of those moving parts are right at the end, last night felt like an object lesson for sports fans, or just in general. It didn't even, not even like directed at Pirates fans or directed at Cardinals fans or baseball fans. It just was an object lesson as far as comparing a team that hopes to win, a noble thought, with a team that expects to win. I think you know which team inhabits each of those dynamics when these two get together. The Pirates hope they're going to beat the Cardinals. And hey, a lot of the time they do in the regular season. They don't get run under. They have some great moments of beating the Cardinals when they thought, you know, that the chips were down. I still think about that McCutchen home run in 2015 where they got up off the mat. The Pirates want to win, but more to the point, they hope to win. The Cardinals want to win, and they expect to win. And wanting to win isn't necessarily the most noble trait in the world. Everybody wants to win, just like everybody wants to do well when you're taking a test in school. Like, kids don't want to fail except for the one dude who looks like he's 6 years older than everybody smoking cigs in the corner. He might want to fail. The class lout. But everybody else wants to do well. But the kids that study hard expect to do well. The kids that kind of half-assed it, they hope they're doing well. We all know that feeling, right? When you didn't prep enough for something, you maybe thought, I could have done better with this. We all know what that feels like. You hope it's going to turn out in your favor versus when you do all the prep you're supposed to do and you do your homework, you expect it to turn out in your favor. I could even apply it to radio. A day where I come in and do 6 hours of prep hasn't happened. Never done 6 hours of prep in the building. That'll be the day. Versus a day where I've had to scramble around and fly by the seat of my pants. I hope I'm going to do a good show on that second dynamic. I expect to do a good show when the first dynamic's in play. Boy, Chris, you must hope a lot. Thanks. One team expected to win. One team hoped they would win. And you know what? It to me, the seminal moment of last night's game sort of defined that, actually. The principal actors in it. The team that expects to win, and they don't play in a gigantic market. They are a baseball town through and through, yes, but they're not like, they don't have benefit in St. Louis of tens of millions of people like New York or LA. They don't. But it's a place where they expect the baseball team to win. What do? They trade for Paul Goldschmidt, and then they lock him up to a fat extension. And Paul Goldschmidt has, by his own standard and by baseball's sort of inflated offensive standard, he has struggled to a large degree this year. His OPS is considerably below 800. He's barely above average as an offensive player this year. He's not, give me Josh Bell over Paul Goldschmidt every day of the week. He's been the better player. But even though he struggled, he paid it back to his team that expects to win, by just knocking a little go-ahead grand slam when they needed something. And by the way, the team that expects to win, the Cardinals, are 8-3 post-All-Star game. In case you're scoring at home, the Pirates are 2-8. The Cardinals were a half game up on the Pirates entering the All-Star break. They are now 6 games up on the Pirates. 6! That's not good. And to go to the other side, teams that hope they win have Clay Holmes out there because they're not going to go with their closer, who's their best pitcher for the situation by far, because he's thrown, I guess, too many pitches and he's unavailable. So the guy that you threw over $1 million at as a 9th-round pick in 2011 trying to stockpile the system, who has never shown that he is going to be anything resembling a really good major league reliever, you throw him out there, and you hear Clint Hurdle talk about it. In Eric's update, you heard that. Clay Holmes has, I think he called him Clayton, said Clayton has shown the ability to get people out when he commands his pitches. He walked a guy and hit a guy in advance of Goldschmidt's grand slam. Chris Mueller has found the ability to find hats that look normal on him when he gets the right size hat. Well, I don't get the right size hat very often. Man, that was not what I wanted to hear from the manager after the game. He's shown an ability to get players out when he has his command. Everything leading up to the Goldschmidt AB would have suggested that he did not have his command. He was the best they had in what I think everybody knew was a crucial game. They couldn't get to Ponce de Leon. And you saw in that Holmes versus Goldschmidt matchup, I think, a one-on-one matchup, mano-a-mano, but writ large, the dynamic of a team with a pitcher and that team hopes that they win, the dynamic of the team and that hitter that they've got and they expect to win, and it was on full display last night. And that's what I took away. The want to is a given. I think Neil Huntington wants his team to win baseball games. I think the players, I know, in fact, Neil Huntington wants to win baseball games. I know the players want to win. They give a crap. They do. I'm not here to excoriate them. The players, that is. Neil Huntington does have a little more control, though, in whether his team that he wants to see win is a hoper or an expector. And for a couple of years, I would argue that he built a good enough team that you could expect them to win. And they did. What do you know? This one hopes that they're going to win. I don't really believe in team chemistry. I don't. But what I believe in is this idea that an organizational culture from the top down is so steady, is so laser-focused, or can be, so oriented towards a never-changing, unceasing goal, which is to win it all, that it changes the way their team plays or the way players play when they get to that team. You think of the Spurs in the NBA, Patriots in the NFL, to a degree, the Penguins within the NHL, and then I think of the Cardinals in Major League Baseball. They're not the best franchise, but they might be the best run. They might be the best pound for pound, like a boxing term. And I felt like yesterday was all about that. Everything that the Cardinals are and that the Pirates are was on display in the 10th inning, period. That's what it was. The Pirates didn't roll over and die, but the team that expects to win got it done. And in so doing, I think the Cardinals pretty much unofficially, but really officially, put the Pirates season in the ground. Text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line at 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. I'm bummed out about that game for pretty much the reasons I just elucidated in the last 12 minutes. There was, however, a point in time in that game where even though with the Cardinals in town, it feels like they're just going to do something that rips your guts out. There was a point in that game where I felt like the Pirates had actually won up them in some ways and had it taken away from them. And it was a point of major frustration for me. And given what I usually say about this subject, you might be surprised to hear what I have to say about it next on the PM team.
Long pause at the belt. Here's the pitch. Swinging a line drive, base hit into right field. Cora gonna wave home the runner. Here comes the throw to the plate. He is out at the plate. Kevin Newman is thrown out by Jose Martinez. The potential tying run is thrown out on a base hit to right field. And the Pirates still trail it 6-5.
I got all my coaches' backs when they make decisions. It's a split second to make the decision. Trying to win the game. We got reports on every outfielder, arm strength, and accuracy. We play on those. Guy made a good throw.
Yeah, but I don't even think Kevin Newman was out, Clint Hurdle. I think Cora made a good decision to send him because I think he beat the throw in the tag. But there's that dreaded six-letter word again. Replay rears its ugly head. Except for me, that's a weird thing to say because I've long been a major proponent of replay. I am pretty firm with my standing in the it's better if you get it right crowd. They could have had the biggest travesty of a game stoppage last year in the NFC title game, right? They could have like, twisted themselves into knots deciding, wait a minute, that was PI, it's the Saints ball. It could have stopped the game for 10 minutes, right? But if they had come up with, yes, that is obviously pass interference, and by the way, it's a helmet-to-helmet hit, so it's the Saints ball, they win, I would have been fine with that, happy with that. I would have said, eh, flawed process, but you got it right. Now, it's not reviewable, obviously. And that was the entire point of and bone of contention in the NFL's offseason. And now they're going to butcher that this year, mind you. But I am a zealous, ardent defender of the get it right above all else approach. I remember early in this station's history when I was still on 2 to 6 a.m., Armando Galarraga had the imperfect perfect game where Jim Joyce butchered the final out of the game and called it safe, even though he was out by pretty much a full step almost. And so Armando Galarraga will go into history knowing he actually threw a perfect game. He retired 27 batters successfully in a row, but he had to get 28, and it turned into the greatest one-hitter you'll ever see. And I had people, I remember, actually calling in at like 3 a.m. saying, hey, just so you know, you're lucky that this guy screwed up this call, that they couldn't challenge it, because this is back in 2010 when you couldn't. Because what would you be talking about today other than ranting about this? And at the time, I said, eh, that hits a little bit close to home. But now, I think to myself, man, how much better would it have been had that play happened and you just go to the booth, go, oh, wait a minute, he's out. Galarraga's got his perfect. It would have been awesome. The drama, right? Video confirming with your own eyes what you knew to be the case. Instead, you got this Jim Joyce was saying sorry, and they had their big kiss and make up session, and everyone lauded Galarraga for being such a great sport. And I say he should be in the record books as having thrown a perfect game. And Kevin Newman was safe yesterday, but I can't prove it, and that's the problem. To get back to replay here. I saw that tag applied, and I called BS immediately. I didn't feel like tweeting it out and going on a rant. The puppy was sleeping. I didn't want to go nuts. But every time I watch a catcher, I always think to myself, you've got to be trained at that position to, as soon as you make contact with the tag, hold it up to the umpire, right? That's a de facto symbol. Hey, I tagged the dude. Therefore, he is out right at this moment. I just showed you the glove because I just made contact with him. You watch that play, the glove hovers over Newman's leg, and it's only when Newman has already touched home plate, mind you, and then the tag hits him on the upper thigh, where that catcher is showing the umpire, who had a pretty good angle. I mean, he was in good position, where he's showing him, hey, ball, right here. It was, you know, there's that little bounce, and then he jams the glove towards Newman some more, and then he actually for sure tags him. But by then, it's a moot point. Newman's touched home plate. That, to me, was a dead giveaway. And here's the problem. Umpire's in pretty good position, but ideal position would have been pretty much ground level, right? Like, able to see the foot, the plate, and whether the glove hovered over his leg or not. But you can't do that. You can't just have an umpire laying down on the ground looking at the play. The problem is you've got replay here that's supposed to fix this, and we don't have a conclusive angle. I can't tell you how many times I go on Twitter and I see something called like a 4D look at a guy hitting a baseball, right? And it's cameras going around the play in real time. And I think, why do we not have that in replay? Why is that play last night that could have tied the game? It could have completely altered how today's show started. If the Pirates had rallied to win, I'd have said they staved the stay of execution for 24 hours or whatever. How that doesn't have a better angle to be looked at is beyond me. And then you have to go, in that case, the rule of the road is you go with the original call if you don't have conclusive evidence to overturn it. So what they're saying to you last night was essentially this, or what they're implying with that is essentially this. We think this may well be what actually happened and that the runner was safe, but we don't know conclusively, so we've got to honor the original call, even if the original call is flawed in the first place. I mean, I'm not going to say what's the point of replay. I just outlined what the point is. The point is to get it right, and when it works, it's great. But when you are stuck in purgatory without a definitive way to find out whether the call was right. You've got a system that, and I'm not talking about in terms of the scope of when it can be applied, like a lot of people do for the NFL. I'm talking about the scope of the camera angles they have available to them. It's incomplete. It's inadequate. And it's a shame because it might have cost the Pirates a game. Bad replay. Bad. Sorry, Dog Dad talking. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan. That's driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Locations, North Huntington and the North Hills. One of Neil Huntington's recent trades is looking, I guess I'll say worse by the day, but now stranger by the day, and we're going to talk about it coming up next. That guy is right, it is the PM team, and I probably should have mentioned that Andrew Filippone on vacation, out this week. I don't know where Pony's going. Well, I do, but I'm not going to say. Because who knows? Somebody might be out there where he's going and accost him. Say, oh yeah, I heard Mulsey say you were in such and such location. I don't want that. Let the man relax. He works hard enough. He works too hard. We patched it up after yesterday's show. He heard me fire, you know, salvos back at him. And there was a friendly phone call exchanged after the show. By the way, the Fan Morning Show Porch Tour. It's ready to come to your house. Oh, yeah. Register at 93.7thefan.com now to have the Fan Morning Show guys broadcast from your house with food and drinks for you and your friends. Remaining dates this Friday, the 26th, and August 16th. It's brought to you by Gutter Helmet, Old Smokey, Iron City, Fanatic Impressions, Primanti Brothers, and J&D Waterproofing. I know that Neil Huntington has taken a ton of flack for the Chris Archer trade, and understandably so. The Keone Kella deal was the sort of, I don't know how you would term it, probably the lesser, definitely the lesser in terms of publicity of the two deals he pulled off. But in sort of a sneaky way, people were saying, you know, this is the kind of guy that can help you subtly, and it's not going to maybe make a big splash, and you're not going to have people just fawning all over this deal, but it's going to be very helpful, right? You trade him for two guys that no one really cares that much about, Taylor Hearn and somebody called Shirten Apostel. Yes, that was the player to be named later. Did we ever get that officially? Did anyone last year on August 17th ever say, oh, hey, the Keone Kella deal got completed? It was Shirten Apostel. So he was a lower cost guy. And when he got dealt, there was the idea that, yes, there were some character issues that he, you know, there was the running with the wrong crowd stuff from his time in Los Angeles. There were little whispers here and there. But the guy could pitch, and even though the on-field stuff was more of the, does he want to close ilk? Like, will he take a setup role here? Is he going to be mad about that? By all accounts last year, it felt like he came in and he did what they asked him to do. He was a better pitcher in the 15 and a third innings he pitched here last year than he was for Texas. Better in terms of whip, better in terms of ERA. He did what they thought he was going to do by and large. And now they suspend him, and we're going to ask our Pirates insider, Jason Mackey, more about this at the top of the hour when he joins us. Suspended for two games. And Clint Hurdle had hinted that he would be activated, and he was, but then he was suspended. And when Clint Hurdle was asked about the delay yesterday in the run-up to the game, all he would say is, we're working through the process. I really don't care all that much about what it might have been, at least as of now, that got Keone Kella suspended for two games. I don't. Like, the nuts and bolts of that do not yet, unless I find out more, do not yet interest me. But when we're evaluating what Neil Huntington is doing with this club, that's when this becomes relevant. That's when you start thinking about it. That's when you start talking about, was this a good idea? Taylor Hearn, ultimately, is not a guy you're going, he might end up being good, who knows. But he's not somebody that was going to help the Pirates last year. But now you've got somebody that was on the 60-day injured list, now gets suspended. Doubtless there is some sort of ill will or some sort of beef between the pitcher and the franchise. And it seems taken in some, along with the Chris Archer trade, like Neil Huntington is functioning as both his own and the ball club's worst enemy. I mean, look at this. I'm not going to even talk about Taylor Hearn anymore. I'm just saying the idea that you traded for Keone Kella, it worked last year, but the Chris Archer thing blew up in their faces so badly that Kella's work didn't even almost matter. It was an afterthought. And now there are clear problems. To what extent they remain problems probably is up to the player at this point. But there are issues. And so you're thinking about Neil Huntington maybe selling off assets coming up the deadline because the team is floundering and it seems like they are obviously making his decision for him that he's going to be a seller and not a buyer. And you think to yourself, is this guy going to make great deals? Is this guy going to be trusted to get the right returns when he's dealing assets, whoever he might actually offload? If it's Vasquez? Because the latest trades here just have not gone very well for them. I know on the Midday Show, and Cook and Joe, they talked about whether it was a good idea to get, whether it was a bad move to get him in the first place because of some of the, you know, just the little whispers and kind of nagging issues that seem to have followed him. I wouldn't say that it was a bad move to get him. I like the aggressiveness, and of their two moves last year, it was the much more measured one by Neil Huntington. It was a calculated risk, I would say. A risk that he would be on the straight and narrow here and there just wouldn't be any blow-ups, that there wouldn't be friction, and that the Archer deal would work out well enough that the Kella deal mattered. It turned out that the Archer part of that didn't work, so the Kella part kind of got forgotten about. But he was counted on to be like, this year's philosophy was, hey, it's the pitching, and then it's the bullpen. Kella, Crick, Vasquez, look at this. That's pretty damn good. That's, you know, what, 96 Yankees closing down games with a lights out sixth or seventh, eighth, ninth. That's a blueprint people have laid down, and that didn't work. Was it a bad move to get him? No, but it was another risk that Neil Huntington took that I think has not gone Neil Huntington's way. And you keep piling those up. I don't know. Eventually the evidence becomes overwhelming, right? And I think Neil Huntington, to his credit, when he talks about stuff like this, when he talks about the moves that he's made, is usually pretty self-critical. But it has not gone well for him. You could talk all you want. Are they going to spend competitively as a franchise? I think you can do more, even within the constraints of what he's working with. Bottom, what? 20% payroll, bottom 10% payroll. You could do more than what Neil Huntington has done. And Kella feels like right now, because it feels like that one's, you know, not a good situation, it feels like that's just yet another example of it. Segment's brought to you by Pittsburgh's number one Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram dealer, ShorkyNorthHills.com. Up next, top of the hour, our Pirates insider, Jason Mackey, going to try to shed a little bit more light on the Keone Kella suspension. Two games, he gets docked. The Pirates did this. It was the old recalled from the rehab assignment, reinstated from the 60-day injured list, then put right on the old suspended list. Whoops! We're going to find out more about that, about whether Jason thinks this team's chances are all but done after yet another loss and another gut punch loss at that, plus all sorts of other things. Maybe Jason has puppy opinions for me on whether I'm a crazy person for getting another one when I already had a dog and a baby. It's the PM team. On the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.